Welcome to the Everything ECU podcast. I'm your host, Carla Ward, and I have been waiting in anticipation to record this podcast episode for weeks. My guests today, that's right, I said guests and team members from an organization out in California called Pretend City. I'm going to let them tell us a bit more about it, but the concept is incredibly cool. And one of the topics I'm excited to dive into with them today is engaging and involving parents in the concept of play. Something that if you've been with me for a while, you know I'm very passionate about. So let's not delay any longer. Welcome to the show, Carly, Marisa, and Lauren.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for having us.
I am so excited to have you on. Yes. So let's kick it off by having you introduce yourselves and telling us a bit about your role at Pretend City, and then we'll keep going with what Pretend City is.
I can start. Again, thank you so much for having us, Carla. We are equally as excited to be here, waiting weeks just like you have. So thank you for inviting us to join you here. My name is Marisa Acosta. I'm one of the education managers. We are a team of three, and we each have kind of different backgrounds and specialties and also focuses on what we do within our team. At Pretend City, I work directly with the staff, mentoring them and supporting them in their professional growth, because the staff are the ones that are working, you know, hands-on, face-to-face with our guests, the little ones and their families every day. And that's kind of a big part of what we do, is support them and make sure they get the training and they have the skills to execute this really great opportunity for families. Behind the scenes, my title says special programs. So I work on executing like large scale installations within the museum. So changing over different spaces, reflecting a different family in our home, changing over a different eating opportunity in our restaurant. So those bigger installations and projects, I take the lead on. I'm also a member of our DEI advisory board. So we have a big focus on making sure we are appropriately and respectfully reflecting the community that we serve to provide, again, this safe and welcoming space for children to come and play with their families.
Oh, that is so awesome. And I cannot wait to dive in more into what Pretend City is, just because to me, it is just one of the coolest concepts. So Lauren, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a bit about what you do at Pretend City.
Yeah, well, thank you, Carla, for having us. Again, we're super excited to be here. My name is Lauren Geiger. I am one of the three education managers on the team. I was brought to Pretend City to uplift high quality early childhood education, make sure that everything we're doing is aligning with our philosophy and our mission statement. So really writing all of our programs that families see when they come in for our general admission days. And then again, working with the staff too, mentoring them, providing high quality trainings for them to understand early childhood education and give them the best tools that they can have to go onto the floor. We are a nonprofit, so all of us wear a lot of different hats. I do a lot of different things, but really my main focus is to uplift high quality education. So
awesome. And I love that. Like I said, when we discussed Pretend City, I love that early childhood education is a component. And Carly, tell us about yourself.
Yes. Hi. Thank you, Carla. I'm Carly Snyder. I'm one of the third education manager. And my title is really child development and outreach. I do all of our Good to Go programs, which is our own child development initiative that we have here at Pretend City, which focuses on different monthly events that we'll dive more into. And I do all the developmental screenings, as well as managing some of the stage staff. And of course, working with a lot of different community partners, bringing in resources for families, ultimately just to help support them in their child's growth.
Very cool. So now the big question, what is Pretend City?
Yes, so Pretend City is a small interactive city for children. It is built 3-4 scales to size, so everything is child size. And it is literally an interactive city. So you can go in and navigate how you would like. It's free range, there's no thing that you're specifically supposed to do, but we have, you know, a Trader Joe's, we have a construction zone, a fire station, just a lot of different, I think 17 different learning spaces. Yeah, our mission is to build better brains and to have families come in and really engage with their children and play with them. I mean, that is what we are there to watch them do, to help support them do, and to really take that time to learn about their child's development and help them learn through the city.
Amazing. I absolutely love it. And I think when we first met, I was like, we don't have this in Canada. And it turns out we do have a mini play museum, but I don't think nearly to the scale that you have. I love this concept so much because I think play, despite us knowing how important it really, really is, it's still something that parents struggle to, not all parents, but a lot of parents struggle to understand because we're raised, I mean, myself included, right? We're raised to sit at a desk, do worksheets, and that's how we're supposed to learn. So we're trying to break that concept of learning doesn't just have to happen on a piece of paper. It can be three-dimensional. And I think you're really, really embracing that at Pretend City.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the hands-on learning experience, you know, and letting the children, you know, have the autonomy to choose what they want to do, what they want to play with, how they want to learn. You know, we have some kiddos that come in and they might be in the art studio for 2 hours, you know, playing in the sensory bin. And that's great. You know, we want to see that. You know, you have the parents that are like, okay, let's go to the next station. Okay, let's go to the next station. But we really try to, you know, explain and show them the importance that it's okay to let them do it for as long as they need to, right? Because they're figuring things out, they're learning, and they're having a good time. So there's just so many different learning opportunities for the parents as well. And like you said, so many don't necessarily know a lot about child development or what the milestones are for their children. So I think for us, and then teaching our stage staff how to, you know, show parents that, you know, and really model it, so that they understand how they can interact with their child, and then specifically in our space, and then take that home and be able to do that there as well, or any of the caregivers ultimately.
Amazing. And what are some of the strategies that your staff would use to encourage a parent with that play? How do you intervene when a parent, you know, is saying the word no a lot when really it's a yes space?
Yeah, correct. I think just, again, it goes to modeling that, sharing with them how they can connect with their child. You know, it might be the kids coming out of Trader Joe's with the cart and they're like, no, you have to stay in there. You can't bring it out. And it's like, that's when we'll be like, no, it's totally fine. They can take it. The city is their space. You know, the whole thing is they go to shopping at Trader Joe's, then they go home to the home in the city, right? Take all their groceries, go make their meal, go have dinner. So I think it's just, yeah, modeling that and trying to show them that, yeah, it's okay. Like play is, you know, unlimited. There is no, you know, just endless possibilities and it's everything. So yeah.
I would assume that the parents that bring their children to Pretend City already understand the concept and want their children to play. But do you ever encounter parents who are just really struggling to come to kind of let go of that control? Lauren, you're nodding your head. Tell us more.
I would say, yeah. I mean, we are a public facility, right? So there are some people that come into our space that really, truly understand all of the educational value that comes from being in our space, all of the developmental assessments that we do and all of the resources that we provide. We are also a place where people just kind of land, right? They're searching for something fun to do for their family. And so they kind of just land on Pretend City. So we have a very wide range of what we see in our space, and our practices definitely have to shift to make sure that we're accommodating those families, right? So we train our staff in looking for certain things and knowing when to enter play, knowing how to enter play, and doing that in appropriate ways that work for all families.
Amazing. Are you able to kind of give an example of how they can support those parents into, you know, embracing that play?
Yeah, I can for sure. I mean, I think the first thing that we always teach our staff is to be aware of yourself as an educator, right? So to know that your presence when you walk up on a parent and a child playing together is inevitably going to change the dynamic of that engagement and that interaction, right? So first and foremost, being aware of yourself as an educator. You don't have to be seen when you walk in a room. It's okay to just walk in the room. And the second piece is to observe, right? Really take time to understand how that parent and the child are interacting. In our space, we have families interacting with each other. We have families interacting in silos. It just kind of depends, right? Like Carly said, we're an interactive city. So you see people independently playing, and then you also see people who are, you know, integrated into the city and working with other families and kind of working through that socio-emotional component, right? But I think there's like a few steps that are really important. You mentioned our own experiences in education, really being taught to sit down, to work on worksheets, and all of our education was really product-based, right? You were learning to the test. You were making sure that you could pass this test. And we know now how important play is, and we really encourage the process in our space. So we encourage families to engage in the process and to make memories together. If there is a product that comes from that, that's amazing. But we really focus on the process. So first and foremost, we want the parent to be comfortable, right? So doing small things can make the biggest difference. Getting down on the child's level, being on the ground with the children and the families is really important. And kind of helping parents build that confidence. So just really being yourself, having casual conversation, welcoming them into our space, asking them if they've ever been with us before. And if we know that they have, kind of building on the relationship that we've already started to build with them. But we want parents to know that they are their child's first play partner, right? And a lot of times parents think that they're being a good play partner by sitting down and watching their child do a puzzle on their own. And really what our job is to do is to give them the confidence and the tools. That's kind of the second piece, right? The tools to be able to engage in play. You know, I used to be a teacher. I worked in early childhood classrooms for about 10 years before I transitioned into this space. And I would always tell my families who had one child, you know, if you're sitting at dinner, don't just let your child have the last piece of fruit, right? Like that is a moment for your child to learn that there are other people at the table. Just because they're the only child doesn't mean that they automatically get that piece, right? And that goes into playing with your child. So if you're going back to that idea of sitting down and playing with your child as they're building a puzzle, you know, take a piece and ask if you can put that piece in, right? Maybe allow yourself to be challenged, maybe put it in the wrong way and verbally say out loud, oh, that doesn't fit there. I must have to turn it. Let me try something different. Really like modeling, like Carly said, that we do for the parents, modeling for the children too. And then I think the third piece is really embedding that theory. So shortening the gap between theory and what we know as early childhood educators and practice and what families are doing in their living rooms, in the backyard, I mean, everywhere that you go, right, in the grocery store. So making the learning visible to parents, saying to them, oh my gosh, when your child is doing that, they're strengthening their fine motor skills. And that is a precursor to writing. So when they go to kindergarten, they're going to have a really great grasp on that pencil because they're playing with Play-Doh, because they're ripping these pieces of paper. So there's a few steps that we have our staff trained in, and that's kind of how it goes for us. Every family is very different, but I think if you are aware of yourself, you know that your presence makes a change, and then you kind of put in those nuggets where you can to educate parents while having just a casual conversation and really playing with their child too, is super meaningful.
So meaningful. There, oh my gosh, love. I wish I lived on your side. I'm all the way on the east. I always say when I'm talking to other early childhood educators in my workshops, I say, you know, we've been trained as early childhood educators. We know the importance of those first 5 years, but these parents are just handed this human being, this beautiful, innocent human being, and they're supposed to just know. Like, I always joke that as the firstborn, I was the guinea pig, right? And, you know, it was a little bit of trial and error. And then when my sister came around, they knew a little bit more. They need that village, right? And pretend city, I mean, it's not a village, it's a city. And you've built this beautiful community to support parents because they don't know what they don't know, right? And I know for my family coming over to Canada as immigrants, we didn't have that support system. They didn't have my grandparents. People need support. You can't do it all on your own. And if you're a single parent, you really need that support. And it sounds like Pretend City really has built a phenomenal community to support that. And I just want to say thank you, because I think it puts early childhood on the next level, but it also supports families in a way that they don't even know they need it. So I think it's just beautiful.
Absolutely. I just want to touch on that a bit, because we have all different kinds of families coming in, right? Local families, families that come an hour away that are just visiting and Google what to do with their kids, right? But we're so much more than just that play space. And that's what we really want to share with families and for them to know. We are a support system. We are there to help you. It's not just a playground or a drop-off daycare. You know, our staff, all of us and our stage staff, you know, we do staff trainings once a month, professional development. Lauren really looks at what they're struggling with, what we can work on, what their concerns are, just overall how we can be a better, just better all around, right, as a staff and for these families coming in. But it's always important to remember that the parent is the expert of the child, regardless of how much they know, right? And again, like I was saying, that so many parents really don't know a lot, right, about child development. They have this baby, they're just handed this baby, and then they're like, okay, now what, right? And that's why I think it's so important that we do have certain programs and, you know, free developmental screenings for all families that live in Orange County, that they can do it online and submit them. And I also do them in person once a month as well. And that's a really great opportunity for parents to really ask questions about the concerns, if this is a typical behavior, if it's atypical, because they don't know, and just really sharing and giving them that support, things they can do at home to strengthen these skills, you know, especially during COVID, and we saw a big decline, you know, in a lot of different skills. And so just being there to support them because so many were home, you know, we couldn't go anywhere, masks, they can't see you talking, you know, all that speech delay, they're not at school. And, you know, it was just a hard time for everyone to navigate, but especially for little ones, right? And so I just think it's super important. I'm thinking of a time, too, of just doing a screening, and this child had, you know, their gross motor skills were pretty much nothing, right? They're really struggling. And I was talking to the mom, and she, well, what are gross motor skills? You know? And so, okay, that's where we are. You know, so just helping really support what they are, what you can do at home for this specific age, you know what I mean? And just the importance of, okay, you need to rescreen in this amount of time, you know, based on how old the child is. You know, it's so important in 2 more months that we rescreen to at least make sure we're still here, you know, and not going backward, or at least at the same spot or moving forward, you know. Reach out to me, email me, ask questions, I'll send you stuff, those kinds of things. And it's really important too, because when we do the screenings in person, we bring in a lot of other community resources. So we might have a regional center present to talk about their programs to get those children in for that early intervention as soon as possible. We have free speech screenings, free dental screenings, free vision screenings, just to name a few. You know, we might have a pediatric dentist on hand. We might have, you know, ABA therapy. It just kind of depends. People want to come and be supportive. So this is part of what I do. And so, like I said, our Good to Go program. So we do a monthly baby program. We had it yesterday. So it's early in the morning before we open to the public. And it's for an hour and a half. And it's just for our littlest friends, birth to 18 months. And it gives them that opportunity to have the whole space to themselves, not having those big kids come in and trampling them over. And mostly, you know, so many first-time parents, and that's where this program is so, so special to me. And babies are, I mean, that's what I did before, like I said, infants and toddlers. And so it's just the most special time, right? And so just really sharing with them and what they can do. And it, I think they don't realize how capable their child is of doing so many things at such a young age, right? They're like, oh, they're 6 months. They can't do this. They can't do that. And it's like, yeah, they can. They can play with noodles in the sensory tub. You know what I mean? Like, they can paint. It's okay. So really just sharing with that. But I think it's just a really, really fun program, and then exposes them to Pretend City. And so many of them stopped, like yesterday morning, so many were stopping. What's your membership like? How can I come back? You know? And so it's so great. We want them from the start to feel comfortable. And so those first, you know, months are so important. We also do 2 neurodivergent family nights a month in the evenings, which is a free event for all of our families with kiddos who have disabilities. So autism, you know, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, some children that aren't necessarily diagnosed, but just delayed. We change the environment a bit. You know, we turn off a lot of the lights. We turn off the sounds. We have calming spaces. We have materials for them, noise-canceling headphones, weighted hats or vests, things like that, fidget toys, all different kinds of things to support them. And I know that's really important to families, that coming on a normal day is way too much, way overstimulating. And so they really, really, really love the fact that we have this night. And we have families that come an hour or two away sometimes for this event. And again, really having the support on those nights too with different community partners. But I think it's just really important the parents share just how it's so great to be in an environment where they're not judged and parents feel the same. It's okay if their child's going to be on the floor having a tantrum. They've been there. They've seen it. Everyone's just in this space knowing that at any moment, you know, their kid might not feel comfortable, might need to leave, you know, might have a meltdown. But everyone just feels safe. We want everyone to feel welcome and included. And so we really want to have those events for families.
Amazing. amazing. Well, and I think parent guilt is such a strong feeling. Like, that's something I've learned over the years of especially running a tutoring company. Parents always have the best intentions for their children, and they never feel like they're doing enough. So having a system where it says that is okay. Children cry, children throw things, children have meltdowns. It is okay. I think they need to hear that more and more, because especially with social media being this beautiful curated space, you start to compare. Whether you want to or not, you start to compare your style to somebody else's style, and you don't know what happens when that camera's off, right? And so being able to have a space where, you know, a kid can have a meltdown and somebody's saying, "Psh, please, that was us 2 hours ago." It's so important, because parents just need to give themselves a break. But if nobody's telling them to, they're not going to, and that guilt's just going to get worse and worse.
Yeah, and I think there's a component of societal pressure too, right? Like, just being in society. I don't have children of my own, but I do spend a lot of time with my cousins who are in the early years of their life. And I have noticed in those situations, when anything happens, when they're experiencing an emotion, or maybe they're not sitting down at the table when we're at a restaurant, people are looking at us and staring. And I'm like, yeah, girl, you want to walk around the restaurant? Go for it. I can see you. So, and that is just so not acceptable in our society. So I think it's a little bit of that too. Even though your child might have just melted down at home, when you're in public and your child is doing the things that you're expecting them to do and another child is melting down, you're immediately looking over, right? And so I think our space kind of helps parents understand that they're not the only ones, right? And also, it's okay and normal and very developmentally appropriate for your children to be having these behaviors in and out of public. You can't stop it when you walk out of your house, right? When you walk out of your front door in your house. So I think it's important for us to start to normalize some of those things. Children feel emotions, and sometimes they feel them at restaurants or grocery stores, where we know maybe that's not the best place to show our emotions because we're adults and we've lived in our society for so long. But with children, they haven't gotten there yet. They don't understand that. So I think our space does a really good job, and those programs that Carly runs do a really good job of kind of bringing that community together for parents to see other families and how they function in society. And in our little city, it's a perfect space, right? Where you're literally in your own kind of society. So it's really special to see parents kind of bond over that and learn from each other too, right? We're trained educators, and we can provide all of that theoretical framework and really give them a lot of that. But for them to be able to learn from each other is also one of our goals. We want to build community in our space because it does take a village.
Absolutely. And I want to loop back to the developmental screening, because I feel like screening is getting a bad rap because people think it's a test, and it's not a test. There's no right or wrong answer, right? But we do need the screening tools so that you don't have a shocker when your child is in grade 5, grade 6, because it is harder to, you know, mature those fine motor skills in grade 5, grade 6 versus at 3 and 4 years old. So is it voluntary? Is it a requirement? How do parents go about getting the developmental screening at Pretend City?
Yeah, no, it's totally up to them. It's absolutely voluntary. We just, you know, a lot of pediatricians we do the ages and stages. So the ASQs, you know, a lot of pediatricians will do it, but it's just very quick and vague. They're the doctor, right? They don't have the early childhood development of like that extra info to give these parents. It's just kind of like, okay, or, oh, we'll wait and see if they're crawling next time. Oh, we'll wait and see if they're walking by 18 months. Oh, you know, and that's really hard to see on my end because I've always worked with the little ones, and I know, you know, there are the developmental milestones, but then we also know that every child develops at their own rate. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, after working with children for so long and studying early childhood, you know, when there's a concern, right? You know, they might be kind of like, okay, they're not doing this and this yet, but you just haven't tried yet. You know, you haven't given them the beads to string and see, you know, they just haven't had that opportunity. And that's another thing when we have those things set up and then they're like, oh, cool, I can do this at home, or like, oh, it's only these two ingredients. You know, you can make it and just throw it in this bin and they're good to go. Just sharing those little things, right? But we have a lot of families, like I said, that just see through our website, through family, at doctor's offices. I mean, it's so interesting to see where they do hear about the screenings. And that's one thing they do fill out when they do it online. Last year, I can tell you that in 2022, I completed 840 developmental screenings. So that's a lot.
That is a lot.
And, you know, and a lot of them, when they need to be referred or when I have a concern looking at their scores, we have a nonprofit organization that we also partner with called Help Me Grow. So if I feel the need that their child needs that extra help, besides just me writing to them or their concerns and sending them articles, I will refer them to Help Me Grow. Help Me Grow then reaches out to the family and helps them find the correct resources that they need. So it might be speech therapy, it might be behavior issues, it might be something for the parent, you know, a class for the parent. It's all over the board, but that just helps them get in as quick as possible. It's so important. And I just, it doesn't take long, right? It's very straightforward. The questions, you know, it's yes, sometimes they're not yet, whether your child does these things in the five different areas of development. Okay. And it might take the parents 10 minutes. And then they have been, and so many times they're like, you know, oh, you know, nothing, you know, I go over the scores. Okay. This, you know, we're doing okay here, but let's work on this. And then all of a sudden they have all these questions or all these concerns come up and then they start going, you know, and it might be one little thing to just like, you know, they still wake up this many times a night or like they're the pickiest eater ever, you know? And so just giving them those tools, like Lauren said, of like, well, like let them be part of making food with you, let them go grocery shopping with you, let them help cut things with you. They're so much more likely to engage and eat what they've seen and what they've helped create. So just little things like that of really teaching parents that it doesn't have to be super difficult. And I know parents are already so stressed, they have busy lives, they're working, they're dropping the three kids off at school, you know, I mean, the day is so busy and jam-packed, you get home, you're like, okay, the last thing I want to do is work on these fine motor skills tonight, you know. So it's just the little things that it doesn't have to be super complicated. It doesn't have to be expensive. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like sharing that it can be these little teachable moments. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And I wanna mention about the screenings that Carly does is that, you know, I didn't know anything about the ASQ. I didn't know about developmental screenings before starting at Pretensity. My background is working with children that are older, maybe in, you know, fifth, sixth grade, moving into middle school, intermediate school, and high school. So, you know, I had always worked with younger children, but I don't have the formal background the way that Carly and Lauren do. What I learned through seeing our Good to Go program and Carly interacting with families is that these screenings are easy to do. And having the space and providing kind of the stage for parents to play with their child and to, you know, just observe their child playing, to engage with them. I think that's one of the greatest things that we can provide is letting the parent know how easy it is to do those screenings. It just goes like kind of hand in hand with the fact that we're a safe space. We want to be a safe space for parents to come and find those resources, to come and ask questions. If they have answers, you know, questions, we can provide them answers, give them resources. That was the coolest thing that we're able to provide to families for free, is the developmental screening, and they're here, they're playing, and they can complete it so quickly.
I love that.
And they get a free ticket to come back when they complete one. So there is a little incentive.
Oh, there's
that.
A nice incentive. I love that. And it comes back to you don't know what you don't know. So if you have a child, it's your first, you don't have any friends with children, you don't have any siblings with children, you really don't know what to expect. So if your child isn't speaking by a certain age, they're not speaking by a certain age. You don't know sometimes. Like I remember way back when I was 12 years old and babysitting, I really didn't know anything. And then even when I was 19, I used to do overnight babysitting. And I remember calling my girlfriend being like, how big can an avocado be to feed this 8-month-old? And she was like, oh, she's like, just give the kid the, like, whatever the piece is, but you don't know. And I'm cutting it into like pinpoint avocado pieces. She's like, you're fine, the kid has teeth, you're good, go for it. And it's just like, you don't know. So being able to use a screening tool like that, because forward is forward, right? So regardless as to what your answer was, the next one, you just want to be that little bit further ahead. but sometimes you need support to get that little bit further ahead, but you don't know it until you do the screening. So I think that is such an incredible tool to offer parents, and they don't know it exists. So being able to be exposed to it is incredible. One last question for the three of you. What do you think is the biggest benefit of play that you've observed over your time at Pretend City?
Do you have time for another podcast?
Right?
Yeah, I mean, play is the most important part of anyone's life, right? I think as adults, if you do have time for another podcast, maybe we can dive into that of playing as an adult, because I think a lot of adults forget how to play and they forget what really they love to do. When I look at children and families engaging and children playing, I see learning. That's all that I see, right? You could be engaged in any type of play and it's hitting on one or more of your developmental domains, like Carly was talking about with ASQs. You don't have to have in your brain that we're going to go home and work on fine motor skills, right? Like, it's happening through play. So allowing your child to play, being a positive play partner for them. Yeah, I mean, that is one thing that grad school taught me, was that I really know nothing. Every door that you open, there's 500 other doors, right? So play hits on, again, all five of the domains, but there's so much cognition happening, neurons firing in your brain. I mean, the connection between your brain and your body, the instincts to understand and really trust yourself. I mean, like, it's holistic, right? And that's the best thing about play, is that it is holistic and it's hitting on every point of your child's development. And just to be present, I think, is the most important thing that we see in our space. Children are so receptive to their parents when they're engaged with them and they're present with them and they're making memories and moments with them that will turn into who they become. I just think it's the most important thing you can do in early childhood. If you're going to do anything for your children, be present and play with them.
Love it. Yes. And 1,000% yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think just being able to share with parents that play is everywhere, right? Like, they think play is just this one thing. Like, they're playing with Legos, they're playing with Barbies, they're this, but it's like, no, going on a walk and picking up some sticks and, you know, getting some leaves and this, and doing a little nature walk. Like, what are we learning about? What does this feel like? How cool is that? Where do you think this came from? You know, so many things, just teaching them those open-ended questions. And then so when we see those parents who are sitting down and engaging and having those moments with their children and those aha moments, it's so heartwarming, right? You're just like, yes, this is awesome. Like, it doesn't have to be complicated, right? Play really is so simple.
Yeah.
And 100%. It's everywhere, and it's always this opportunity. And so, again, just, yeah, allowing caregivers to understand that, I think that it just, you know, you don't have to think too hard about it, right? So many parents are so focused on, like, yeah, you need to know this and this and this by kindergarten, you know? And that's one of the biggest things with the screenings I try to share with them is, like, no, these social skills are so important. That they can share, that they understand that this person is having a hard day and they hurt their feelings, or that they're tired today, or they're mad, like those little things. They need to be able to navigate in that way. You know, all the other stuff that they need to learn is going to happen naturally, but having those just more simple moments is what is so important in the early years.
And it's all that matters. Like, at the end of the day, when you ask a parent what they want for their child, most of them will say they want their child to be happy. And really, when we write what we want to be happy, right? We want to wake up in the morning and be excited to do whatever we're going to do. So, I mean, nuts to worksheets.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a big conversation we have to have with a lot of partners. And it's something that's not widely understood quite yet, but we do our best to kind of educate people when they come into our space about the value of the process, right? And really focusing on that. And it's funny, when I was a teacher, I always asked my parents that at the beginning of the year, you know, what do you want for your child? Is it for them to learn how to ride a bike? Is it for them to be happy? You know, and most parents do say that they just want their child to be happy, and healthy came up a lot too. And I think going back to what Carly said, if you have a good grasp on how to regulate your emotions throughout your life, you will be happy, right? I mean, you're never going to be happy forever. You experience all kinds of emotions every single day. But if you have a handle on how to regulate yourself and how to be a part of a society and understand your emotional regulation and others' emotional regulations, you will be happy. So that's what we do.
Awesome. Well, I absolutely love the work the three of you are doing. I'm sure that I am not the only person that is thinking, how can I make my pretend city in my city? Because I think everybody needs to have a pretend city in their city, because play is the magic. Play is going to, I mean, maybe I'm being a little too optimistic, but play is what's going to solve the world's problems. Because the sooner we become more in touch with who we are and we give children the space and the autonomy to learn who they are, all the world's problems are going to be fixed. I'm sure about it.
Yeah, you know, that's something we always say about Pretend City too, is like, we want to create out of the box thinkers, right? And if we continue to put people in a box and we give them worksheets and we're all doing the same thing and everything is so streamlined, we're not going to have innovators or creative thinkers or critical thinkers. So yeah, if you're crazy, I'm crazy too, because I think play will change the world. And I think play heals the soul. So if we also dedicate ourselves to playing more, I think as a society, we will be happier and healthier.
Absolutely. And be able to express our own feelings. Like we're talking about, you know, being happy, but also having the autonomy and the authority to say, I don't like that. And being able to say, this is how I'm feeling. And owning it and having other people be okay that you are owning your feelings. Because if you're an 80s kid, you grew up hearing, you want something to cry about? I'll give you something to cry about, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we used to say that to children. I can't believe that was said to me, right? And we are all learning. And I think play is just gonna fix it all.
We hope so.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I will make sure that all your links are below for everybody to see, and all the best on your endeavors, because what you're doing is truly incredible.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Carla. We had such a great time.